Hello. Welcome to the Autocar Podcast, My Week in Cars, with Pryor this side of the desk. Stephen Cropley, that side of the desk. Hello, Steve.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
Good, mate. Yeah, I mean, we are in the boardroom of the British Motor Museum. What's happening in boardrooms today, Steve? Big news.
Basically, it's all concerns Bentley and Aston, doesn't it? The boss of Bentley, Adrian Hallmark, was announced first as leaving the job with immediate effect, and then about half an hour later it came out that he was going to be the new boss of Aston Martin as from October latest, they said.
Yeah, I saw that, and that's what, just over 6 months' time, I suppose, is it?
Yeah.
So that's, do we assume his garden will be looking quite good between now and then?
Yeah, that's right. But it doesn't seem long, does it? I found myself thinking there's obviously been a lot of footwork in the background here, because the Hallmark's departure was announced with a lot of rather generous praise from the high-ups at Audi and VW Group, which they wouldn't necessarily do, would they? Although, you know, he has done a good job. But they credit him rather generously. And I think by the time they say he'll be in the new job October latest, I think that probably means, you know, week after next, doesn't it?
Yeah, it means quite soon, you would think, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Because sometimes with this sort of thing, I mean, even in our business, it happens occasionally, doesn't it? Somebody says, I've come to an agreement to go and work somewhere else. And before you know it, somebody is cleaning the plant pot off your desk and you're out, and and they wouldn't say a good word about you.
No.
As far as they're concerned, you no longer exist.
That's it.
So
I think
it does feel quite generous to say. But what Bentley's had, a record year the year before last.
Yeah.
Second best ever year last year.
Yeah.
The turnaround has been pretty good under.
And of course, an amazing trip through COVID. Do you remember all the...
Of course.
How it was absolutely industry-leading, the way they dealt with COVID and got people to work and kept infections under control and looked after folks that did get infected and so on. They were extremely methodical. In fact, I think Hallmark showed what his qualities are, because, you know, to me, it's two things. It's this excellence of management and the culture. And if he's going to create the same at Aston Martin, which I bet he is, that's great. But the thing that I was thinking, you have experience of this. Felisa, the ex-Ferrari bloke, 78, stepping out soon because he's, you know, probably wants a break. He presumably has done some pretty good stuff. I mean, you were in a DB12, and you reckon that's up there now?
I mean, that's a really, it's a really good car, isn't it? I wonder how much was done under Felisa, but also how much was done under Tobias Moers, who was the ex-AMG bloke who was in post before him, because it does feel a little bit AMG-ish in some ways. It's a bit hot roddy. You know, the steering's a bit more remote than you might think from some Astons present. But it's a seriously good car. The model range is... We drive the new Vantage soon, but the model range is getting there or thereabouts, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's... Well, I mean, what need... If the model range is good enough, what needs to be done?
Well, I suppose you've got to... And I believe Felisa's done this too. He's kind of built a very capable and durable engineering department. And so he's sort of set up something that allows him to retire knowing that it will, that these people will be able to carry on at a high level. And what you hear, it's been hard to talk to him because he's just one of these people that deeply hates any form of publicity. He just wants to do the work.
Yeah.
But what you hear is that he's been fantastically busy, you know, all hours of the day and night and all that. And he has done a lot, but it tends to be, you know, making sure things can proceed in the future from an engineering point of view. But I think Hallmark now is going to, you know, get the dealer's toes along the line and make sure all of the sort of corporate identity is perfect and everybody's happy. I'd be fascinated to know. I haven't looked, but I'd love to know what's happened to the share price.
Oh, yeah, interesting. Well, I can have a look, mate, while we're talking.
It is on the floor. I mean, it started at 19 quid, I think. And
when I first had the IPO.
It was 150 or something like that.
It was, because didn't they were, the people who backed it in the first place were kind of insistent that it probably went public before it was ready to, do you think?
Is that
fair?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was...
They just wanted their money back.
Yeah, and they valued it more than it was, because they thought Ferrari is what Aston should be aspiring to be.
Yeah.
And they priced it rather too close to what Ferrari is as a thing.
But it's funny, it always seemed funny to me that because you know, Andy Palmer, the MD at the time, got the CEO at the time, got a large amount of the blame for this, and perhaps he was blamed because he also did well out of the deal. But there are all sorts of other people that are involved in these sorts of underwriting deals. There presumably was a, you know, an underwriting firm, bank or someone that must have, you know, been involved in valuing it. So I don't... It was inexplicable that it should have busted quite so much.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is down from launch by 99%, the share price.
Quite a lot.
But in the past day, it's up 2%, and in the past week, it's up 6.3%. You know, I think so encouraging noises coming out of the...
Yeah.
Of it. I would, if I worked there, mate, I would be pretty pleased by that, wouldn't you? I would think to myself, this is a good appointment.
Because Bentley is definitely, and has been this last 5-6 years, a really happy, purposeful, you know, well run place, and the quality's good. Everything's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the great thing about Hallmark is that he's very good at the front of house stuff, looking after the customers, but he also understands the process really well. Were you with us when we went round the factory at Crewe one time, and he was explaining, you know, headlight fit and, you know, how you paint the corners of panels and he's really great at all that stuff.
So I would have liked that. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I have been round the factory and I do like it very much. For all of the perfection and everything else, one of my favourite bits about it is they have a big team of people stitching leather together, and in the steering wheel, which of course is sort of cross stitched on the inside of the wheel rim, everybody who does that, it's all done by hand, to determine where they're going to put the stitching, they mark little pinpricks in the leather, and every person who does it with a fork, and they've all got their own fork. So how far apart those stitches are is determined by what fork that person brought from their house to become their Bentley fork.
So fork as in knife
fork
and fork?
Fork as in knife and fork, yeah.
Little
knife, yeah, just a genuine kitchen fork, you know. And they go, put in four pinpricks and then move along, put in another fork. Yeah. And they
it is magic, isn't it?
It's lovely,
magic.
Isn't it? Lovely, that. I love that detail. But, you know, for all that it does, there is still that very much, you know, hand-crafted, hand-stitched, hand-sewn.
Stop. Yeah, long may it continue. Yeah. I bet he'll make an issue of that at Aston as well. Mm. That's exciting.
It is exciting.
It makes you speculate on to what extent Aston and Bentley are rivals, doesn't it? Because, you know, are they sort of directly in competition? I suppose they must be.
I suppose they are. I mean, we did a DB12 group test the other day that Matthew Saunders wrote, our road test editor, in the mag. And I then put a video on it on the YouTube, and a lot of people said, where's the Bentley then? Because we did DB12 versus Roma, Ferrari Roma versus Maserati Gran Turismo. And people are going, should you not put a Bentley Continental GT in that?
And was there any discussion at your end?
Well, I think there's only so many cars you can have, and I
squeeze
think Matt thought
pages.
He'd probably go for the more dynamic, towards the more dynamic end of things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that must compete. And I think if you're in the market for a DBX, then presumably a Bentley SUV is also on your radar, isn't it, you think?
It's got to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So yeah, I mean, they are... They're not a fit. There was a time when I thought that, you know, Aston Martin and Lotus together would have made a very complementary range. You know, one would have led into the other quite easily. But Bentley and Aston seem to me to have large amounts of overlap.
Yeah.
But, yeah, exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Anyway, on with the rest of the pod proper, which we're going to talk about our respective autocar columns over the next half an hour or thereabouts. So on the subject of happy places to work, you've been to see Derek Mathewson.
Oh, mate, what a good thing to do. I met Derek Mathewson. He's the guy that is the sort of kingpin of this television series called Bangers and Cash. And there's a family-run museum, garage, auction house in Pickering in Yorkshire, as far away as you could possibly want to be, from, you know, where we hang out anyway, which runs these auctions, 9 a year, 600 or 700 lots each time.
Wow.
And I met him in the House of Commons, believe it or not. We were at a sort of Nobs dinner. And he was old in court. What a good bloke. You know, absolutely the same as he appears on the box. Completely level man. You know, just if you ask him a question, he answers it. And great, good humour, jokey, fantastic fella. Anyway, he said, you know, I was doing the usual, you know, if we front up, you know, can we come and see you? And he said, yeah, anytime. So in comes the invitation, and I had a friend who was interested in a car up there, you know, a little vintage car. So I thought, okay, we'll get in the Audi, go up there. 500-mile round trip. In the Audi SQH
that you're running at the moment.
That's it. Yeah. Pretty good trip. Mm-hmm. Had a few glitches inevitably on the filling up side. But anyway, Derek Mathewson turned out to be just the same, lovely bloke. There are 15 people who work there.
Right. He's the gaffer, is he?
He's the boss, the gaffer. Of the whole place. He's the gaffer, and the business has been going since 1970. Family business. Mm. But the staff consists of either family or old mates.
Mm.
And I tried to photograph him. I just said, look, I'm come all this way. I need a picture for my column. So I'd pull out the telephone, and he grabs hold of his mate, Dave, and he insists on being photographed with this bloke, Dave, who was just, and Dave had finished just a few minutes before telling me what a wonderful guy Derek was and how he propelled the entire local community and everybody loved him and how damn lucky we were to be in his orbit. So it was a tremendous day out. And you know, I feel like I'm his second best mate. The only trouble is he's got about 30,000 second best mates.
That's some best mate. Yeah. So are we gonna go up at some point and do record something up there or do something up there?
Well, he remembered that we'd been talking about doing the pod. It is a hell of a long way, but we are up there now and then, aren't we?
Yeah.
And well, he said,
DB12 triple test, we were up there.
Just give us a day's notice, mate. I'll be here.
Oh, super.
And he's such a great bloke. He's just got interesting opinions on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Not strident, you know, he doesn't force feed you his opinions or anything. He's just a really, really nice fella. Had a good time.
So what goes through the auctions? Is it all cars? Is it car paraphernalia and
cars, motorcycles, quite a lot of motorcycles. There's all kinds of things. I mean, there was one of my friends, you know, there was a kind of mobile ice cream stand that was going through. And, you know, there'll be dopey little 50s sort of carrying three-wheeled carrying conveyances. And there was appeared to be a piece of JCB equipment out the front. I wasn't sure if it was mending the roof or being for sale, but honestly, there's everything. There's everything you could imagine.
Could that be a dangerous place to go on an auction day?
I think it would be, because a lot of it's done online now. My friend looked at the car and he did bid on the car. Wasn't successful, but he bid remotely.
Hmm.
And they're used to taking lots of remote auctions. But it's a fabulous place just to go and wander around. And I was looking for candidates for the Festival of the Unexceptional. Saw this excellent Rover 213S, which...
Would that have been a...
Not sure if it was old enough.
Hang on, what shape is that? Is that the round one or is that the squarish?
It was a squarish one.
Squarish one.
It was Irish, so I was a bit wondered why it was. Irish reg.
Is that Honda-based mechanicals?
I think so.
That era?
Yeah.
Okay.
But good little car.
Hmm.
But there were loads of things like that, you know, fast forwards all over the place and, you know, sort of slightly forlorn-looking Rover 75s and... couple of, you know, there's a Rover 600 there and anything you like, honestly, mate. I tell you, we'll go there and it will be hard to contain ourselves.
Yeah, I look forward to it very much, mate. sadder news this week on Marcello Gandini.
Yeah, well, he died at a great age. Mm. And I suppose everybody's got to die. So I think you can look at it two ways. It is sad that he died, but he certainly fulfilled his life, you know, and he, you know, to have produced cars like the Miura and the Bravo and the Countach and even the Citroën BX, which is a pure Gandini car. Mm. To have put all that on the record and, you know, the man will never be forgotten, which is a bit different from you and me, isn't it? You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, not me. Not so much yourself, mate, of course.
Stop it. But when I was a kid, I remember exactly where I was. I was walking to the end of a footpath in Petersfield, and I mad into cars, as you'd imagine, and I saw a car pulling out of a car park, out of a nearby factory car park. And I looked away, and I went, God, that was a Countach. And I looked back, and it was a Citroën BX.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was a long way away, you know, but at the corner of my eye, I was like, what's that? That looks like a Countach.
Just because of the detail and the architecture. Yeah. How interesting. Yeah. Gosh.
And I still remember very vividly that. And I would have been, I don't know, 10, 11, something. Oh, I don't know. Early 80s, mid 80s, maybe never something like that. But yeah, just, something about the Citroën BX, he said, it made it to production. Exactly as he had
pretty much
envisaged
yeah
it.
If you look at the prototypes of, it's very much the car that he intended to design. If you look at his drawings and actually you look at every panel and it's got that sort of lovely chiseled theme that was right for the time, so sophisticated really. I went to see him. We had in another life, you know, we had a Italian correspondent who knew him, and I went round to his house and I made a slight mistake by talking about Giugiaro, who preceded him at Bertone, you know, the coach builder, Italian coach builder. And he had apparently there was a beauty contest and Giugiaro was chosen over Gandini. Young Giugiaro was chosen over young Gandini.
Oh, interesting.
And only after Giugiaro left to start his own business, Ital Design, Gandini got the phone call. Hmm. But you could argue that Gandini, you know, at least matched Giugiaro and perhaps did bigger and better. I mean, I was trying to think of my life without Countach. Countach has been, you know, some things follow you through life. I think I've driven 8 Countaches, over the years. I remember having a conversation with him about two things. He had a slightly dusty opinion of Giugiaro. Didn't think he was incompetent, he just, you know, didn't see why he should like him. And the other thing is he was rather cascading about the body kits they put on the sides of Countaches later. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Because if you look at the first one, the LP400.
Oh, what a shape.
Yeah, and it's so pure and beautiful.
Mm.
But, so I think he lived a good life. You know, adored and revered till the last day. It's not bad.
No, that's pretty good going, isn't it?
So I think we should be happy about the bloke's life.
What is a Countach like? I have not driven.
Oh, it's an interesting car. Interesting car. I remember going, the last one I ever drove was a 455 horsepower version, which there's so quattro valvole or something.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going around Castle Coombe in it and thinking, 455 horsepower at the time was a lot because cars were lighter, and Countach is fairly short. Funny engine layout. The engine's back to front, you know, and
it's behind the gearbox.
It drives forward.
Right?
The gearbox is under your hand.
Yeah.
So the gear stick goes straight down into the gearbox, in effect.
Hmm.
And then it drives back through itself to the rear axle.
Right.
So the drive comes forward to the gearbox, gets geared down, and then goes back along a drive shaft that goes through the sump of the engine to a final drive.
Gotcha.
So the whole thing's fairly compact for a longitudinal engine.
Yeah, but quite tall, is that right?
I think because the shaft goes through the sump, it's not too bad.
Right, okay.
It's not like the Ferrari BB, the Boxer, which had a high engine.
Ah, yes, okay, yeah.
But anyway, I remember going around Castle Coombe. I'm not a hero driver, but I remember going around there thinking, just a bit more poke would be good, you know, than 455 brake horsepower. And that's all right, isn't it?
You know, if you think that at Castle Combe, I reckon that's all right.
Yeah.
That's a fairly trusty car. I did see a clip the other day of our mate Mauro Callo poking one sideways around the Grand Tours Ebola drone, which I think is Harry Metcalf's Countach. And but Mauro said after that, he said, yeah, I like that car. Good car.
Yeah.
You can move around, you know, you can move it around. It's not as spiky and terrifying as you think it might be.
The thing I remember was shortness, but not too much overhang. Mm-hmm. And but the other thing is, of course, ridiculous driving position, because the lines of the body and the powertrain were all put in the car before they gave the monkeys about the actual driving position. So if you're a fat bugger like me, you know, reasonably tall, you found that every time you go over a big bump, you have to kind of lower your head so as not to hit the roof. It's got a really low roof line. Yeah. And the other problem is reversing. You cannot see backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who knew what they were doing would open the door, you know, the big scissor door.
I do, yes.
Sit on the sill. On the sill and look back over the deck.
Yeah. I saw somebody do that on a track day when I was younger. They were just manoeuvring around the Goodwood.
I mean, you do look like a Goodwood dude doing
on the sill. And I just think that could go wrong, couldn't it? I mean,
foot slips.
If you get that, you are in trouble.
What a car.
Yeah. Very good.
What a car.
Cool. Right, Steve and I are going to take a short break and we'll be back with more My Week in Cars in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Hello, welcome back to My Week in Cars with Pryor over here, Cropley over there. Steve, you've just taken your Alpine A110 for its first MOT?
Yeah, first MOT.
And they gave you what while you were waiting?
Well, they gave the car a clean bill of health, which was only right because it's done under 10,000 miles.
Yeah.
But they lent me a Toyota IQ, a 2014 Toyota IQ, the little smart-sized car.
Mm.
And I was charmed by this thing. It was a lost opportunity because it looks like a piece of... It something out of the workshop. It's not
curiously short. And
if only it had been nicely styled.
Yeah.
But it was perfect, and absolutely nothing wrong with it. You know, full of that grey plastic upholstery, the trim that all Toyotas of the time had. But it was all faultless. The car, you know, the seat was perfect. The engine was a lovely little...
Is it a triple? Sweet. Was it a little three-cylinder thing? Was
I think there was a triple and a four, and I think this was the four.
Right.
Five-speed box, air conditioning, power windows and all that. Anyway, I used it for a morning's zipping about, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it just made me think how excellent Toyotas of that era and, you know, and beyond really are. You know, they are built with integrity. The integrity in this car practically reaches out and grabs you by the throat. It's so good.
Mm.
And I kept thinking about the cars like this. You know, while we're all sort of fussing about electrification and where cars are up to and, you know, what the law's going to do to them and all the rest of it, cars like this just lead a nice, peaceful life.
Mm.
And I'll bet you that IQ, you know, instead, I think it's done 25. When it's done 50, it'll be the same. And that'll be another 10 years' time.
Yeah.
And somebody's just going to have a nice, peaceful time in it, not worrying about anything.
No. And I don't know what it is, mate, whether it's... Well, I suppose it's our job, isn't it? The focus on our job. I think about the way of the car business all the time to an extent that slightly worries me at times. And actually, for most people, they'll just go, well, it's fine. I'll buy what I want, yeah, and that'll be that. And, you know, whatever that might be.
Take it easy.
I'll buy, yeah. Well, I'll just buy it. If there's an electric car that's good, I'll buy one of those. And if there's an internally combusted car that's good, I'll buy one of those.
Yeah.
And that's that. I've just back from driving a Suzuki Swift, the new Swift. The all-new Suzuki Swift.
Yeah.
All is doing some heavy lifting because it's the same architecture fundamentally as the old one, but that's fine. It's 3.8 metres long. It's 1.7 metres wide. It's 950 kilos.
950. Aren't they brilliant? Kilos.
They are. I said, how do you do it to the boss of Suzuki cars in the UK? He said, well, there's this... Oh, I'm going to have to bring it up on my... just have to bring it up on my laptop at the same time. He said, we've got a philosophy which is smaller, neater, lighter. He said, it's a Japanese philosophy. There's a name for it. And I was like, oh, I'm not gonna know what that is. Anyway, they then did explain it later, which I will look up in a second. It's got a 1.2 litre triple naturally aspirated with a very mild hybrid motor, does 65 to the gallon, 5-speed box, everything you want. 19 grand.
Yeah.
And they now do this warranty thing where as long as you get it serviced at their dealership, they will effectively warranty that work for 12 yeah. months, and they will just keep doing that and keep doing that.
Yeah, I've seen your story, so, actually. I think it's online.
No embargo.
I love the headline. It says, Suzuki saves the small car.
That, I can't claim credit for the headline, but that will be...
But
I reckon
that's the story you wrote.
That's basically the story. Yeah, yeah. They are just... I said, how are you going to... Because they've got no EVs in the lineup yet. I said, how are you going to meet this zero emissions mandate then? He went, well, we're not. This year, you know, we will book some against future stuff because you can do that, you know, you can play it.
Oh, so you can delay it a bit.
You can delay it a bit, yeah. You can sort of, I forget what they call it. You can, it's quite a complex system, but you can affect, if you've beaten numbers in the past, you can book those against what you're doing this year. So people who are already big into EVs will do that. You can buy credits from EV manufacturers. So they will do, Suzuki will do some of that, but there you can't buy credits yet, apparently. Or there are fines, which you will pay, and they may pay some of those. They've got an EV coming next year, but I think they think in the next 18 months or so, there will be what Dale Wyatt, who's the director of Suzuki UK, called a roadblock.
He's a cool bloke, isn't he? He's been doing it for a while now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And he's amazingly relaxed and sort of normal.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And he said exactly that about their dealers as well. He says, you know, we've got a... There are reasons that people buy a car. You know, that you will buy the car because the product is good, buy the car because you like the company, but you will buy a car because you like the people you are buying it from. And he, I think, embodies that kind of dealership.
It's him.
Family
yeah.
dealer.
I ran. Do you remember I had a Solerio? Remember that car that we, the brake, we were testing this little Suzuki and the brake pedal busted?
I do remember, yeah.
And then we, you know, there's nothing wrong with the car really. No. Engineers came from every point of the compass to fix it.
They did,
Do you remember how
it was at Millbrook Proving Ground and... in brake testing for our road test, the pedal went to the floor and they immediately suspended all sales of that car, called them back from dealerships.
Amazing. Jim Holder and I, just to sort of try and show that the car was not, you know, fatally flawed, ran one together as a long-termer. And I remember that car really fondly because it did all the other stuff, very light, very economical, unpretentious, agile. But I went twice to Suzuki dealerships, and they're just, you walk in the door and they behave as though they're really pleased to see you, and it's such a good feeling.
My sister-in-law bought a Wagon R Plus for exactly that reason. She went, I like the dealer. What do you think of the car? I don't know, but
they're nice people.
Well, they're nice people, so I bought one.
Oh, I think it's good.
Shosho Keitanbai, apparently, is the Japanese phrase that they have, the philosophy they have, smaller, neater, lighter.
Yeah.
Seems to work.
Oh, I wish them success. I hope they last forever, Suzuki.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. Let's talk a bit more, my column. Have you seen the new Lotus program by Chapman?
Yeah.
Or Chapman Bespoke,
Chapman Bespoke.
Chapman Bespoke, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I I've put it in my column only because it evokes the name of Lotus's founder, Colin Chapman. And sometimes when people write stuff in our business, and this is they will get to the end of the feature and they'll go, WO would have approved if they're talking about a Bentley. Yeah. Charles Rawls would have approved.
Yeah.
And every time I read it, I think, for heaven's sake, how do you know that?
Yeah.
Because, he's not...
Can't really dial him up.
Is he? Yeah. And I wanted to, I don't know, what would you think? So the Chapman Bespoke Program is a way of extracting extra money from customers who will spec up cars with unique paintwork.
Yeah.
It goes all the way, I think, doesn't it, to creating one-off models.
There are
Rolls Royce programs do.
That's it. There, you can get a tarted up existing model. You can get a series, so they're going to produce special models that are Chapman bespoke. And they'll build you a one-off if you've got enough money.
Hmm.
I'm sure the one-off means a special body over an existing platform and powertrain. But I think we have to tolerate this stuff, and the cars are interesting, but it is shameless optimism, really.
Opportunism.
Opportunism, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. I do think. And I...
Is that... That's your point?
Well, kind of, but I also think, I think Bentley gets, on average, the spend on its Mulliner program is something like £35,000 per car.
Yeah.
And you sort of think, I wouldn't use the phrase, but if somebody said to Colin Chapman, people are going to buy your cars, mate, and they're going to spend an extra 35 grand on bits, you might think that was okay.
Yeah.
You might think, actually, that's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm right. I don't know where...
Rolls-Royce, at the minute. They've got a bit more of a tradition, haven't they? Mm. I remember going to P&A Wood, the Bentley Rolls vintage dealers, and they showed us a Rolls-Royce saloon which had an oil painting on the roof because some rich person in the 20s or 30s, whatever it was, could pay to have an artist, do a version of Michelangelo on the... But I don't know whether Lotus has quite got that. I mean, people have spent plenty of money on better engineering for Lotuses,
but
I don't know whether flash trim is...
No, that's a fair point. It's usually to make them go faster by making them lighter and making them more special way, isn't it?
Magnesium
less. Putting less on them, not more.
Yeah.
Every generation of the Lotus Elise or every special edition would have some wheel that saved X number of grams over the previous one.
Yeah, yeah. That works, that business of fitting lighter wheels does make cars accelerate quicker.
Mm.
I had an Elise that did that very thing.
Oh, really?
I went to Hethel and they lent me a set of wheels for hill climb.
Hmm.
Car was faster.
Yeah. Porsche said it very recently about the 911 ST that I drove last year. That's got magnesium alloys. And I said, does that help the unsprung mass assist the ride quality? He said, not a lot, but it does make it go and stop quicker.
Yeah.
Which I think, it's part...
It's that business of getting it to rotate and stop rotating.
Yeah.
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 Very interesting stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. One last thing before we finish then. There is a commemorative service for Sir Stirling Moss.
Yeah, it's a Westminster Abbey job. Now, I think they have invited a lot of luminaries from the business and people that Stirling and family would have known and so on, but they're reserving 722 seats for the punter, for people, like us, I guess. And 722, because that was the number of his winning Mercedes 300 SLR in the 1955 Mille Miglia, which is the most famous race, where, he averaged nearly 100 miles an hour for 1,000 miles.
On the public road.
On a public road, yeah.
Am I right? Those roads were not all... completely closed?
No, they were. I think they were supposed to be.
Right.
The local copper was supposed to sweep the population away and all that. But there were plenty of occasions when they, met a donkey cart coming the other way. Shocking. It is extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. It is extraordinary. The story for that in the autocar was written by his co-driver.
Yes. Dennis Jenkinson. He certainly did it in motorsport. I'm not sure about...
Oh, was it not? I thought it was in the autocar.
No, I think it might have been motorsport.
Oh, mate, in that case, I'm very sorry, mate. I'm very sorry. I was just about to plug the archive and say that's where you can read it.
Well, you but can maybe you life. Can't. There are stories by Dennis Jenkinson in autocar.
There are.
Yeah.
Now, somebody told me a story once about Dennis Jenkinson, and you might know this, you might have heard this, you might correct me if I'm wrong. They said somebody went round to dinner at Jenks's house.
Yeah.
And he cooked him dinner, and Jenks puts the dinner down on the table. And,
yeah.
and the bloke says, "Are you not eating, Dennis?" And he says, "You've got the plate."
That was Alan Henry.
Is that a true fact?
Yeah. And apparently and Jenks finished up eating his fried egg out of the pan because AH had the plate. Sounds like our own domestic arrangement.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Brilliant. Well, that brings us to the end of My Week in Cars for this week. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, mate.
Plenty more from Autocar over at themagazineshop.com. I have got 1955's issues lined up in front of me as I speak. It's been that easy to find them from the moment we started talking about them until now. What do you want to hear from 1955, Steve? 17th of June, front cover, Morris on the front cover. Morris Oxford, price £525.
I'll take
it's
two.
It's a bargain, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, thanks for that. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, very soon. Yeah, cheers, mate.